Oh my God, I'm chilling.
What happened? Oh my God.
Oh, I just can't.
What?
To take NyQuil or not to take NyQuil?
That is the question.
That is the question because my throat hurts, but I'm having Sunday anxiety. We're recording this on March 3rd, Sunday, March 3rd, 8:40 p.m. But you know, sometimes NyQuil makes you it sometimes makes me anxious.
Oh.
It makes me not sleep at all. So I can't decide.
I don't know.
And I'm anxious right now because I'm single parenting and I've said it a million times. My heart goes out to you single moms. My God.
Oh my God. No, I can't.
Yeah.
Bless ya. Bless ya.
Bless
ya. That's all I'll say.
Hardest job in the world.
For real.
We are recording on a new host. So what do we call this? I don't know.
I don't know.
Not a new host site. Whatever. Not Zoom.
And so the quality will be so much better. And it's probably all in my head anyway. You know, you're your own worst critic. But I was like, oh my God, why am I so crackly? My bad.
Yeah. Very unprofesh.
Unprofesh. Not cute. We're 90 deep now. So we got to shape up or ship out.
And I want to shape up.
And I'd much rather shape up.
That's right.
I just wanted to say real quick, patrons, I'm like 40 orders behind. I'm sorry. Your gifts are coming. I feel like I say that a lot to y'all. Sorry. It's really hard to keep up with. I'm telling you right now.
I know.
I'm just telling y'all, if you've ordered, God, maybe even some of you January people, I think just February on, it's coming. I know. We have it. Don't worry.
Rach takes on a lot for us. Thanks, Rach.
No problem. Anything for y'all.
She's threatening she's going to give it to me to do. And you will be far more than 40 days behind.
Ugh, it's my dream. I'm just going to come drop it off on your front doorstep and run.
That will be the last day of patron.
Bummer.
JK. All right.
All right. What are you telling me about?
I'm telling you about Bob and Kay Schwartz.
Any relation to Tom Schwartz?
No, there's no CH in there.
Oh, okay.
So it's Schwartz, I guess. But, you know, everyone tends to just say Schwartz. So I'm like, is that how you say it? Or is everyone just, I don't know.
All right.
So Bob and Kay Schwartz. Mm-hmm. Sources are Kibben.com, Washington Post, a Medium article by Karen Marie Shelton, the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And I think I originally heard this story from Mr. Ballin's YouTube channel, but I can't remember. The morning of January 16th, 1984 started like any other in Cape St. Clair, Maryland, which is a suburb of Annapolis. Sounds
cute.
Like a suburb of Annapolis, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Cape St. Clair.
Sure.
You know, very New England-y. Kay Schwartz made breakfast for her kids, Annie, who is 9 years old, and Larry, who is 17, and shuffled them off to school. She was actually an English teacher at Broadneck High School where Larry went. So they went together. And Bob Schwartz, her husband and Larry and Annie's father, was a computer technician and neighbor said he would often help them with chores and things they needed around the house. So just a little handyman of the neighborhood.
Sure.
This particular day was fun for Larry and Annie because it started snowing. So they got out of school early.
Nice.
Uh-huh. Best days. Annie was playing with her friends in the snow, but around dinner time, Larry went to look for her because Kay and Bob wanted to have dinner together. And he teased her that she would be in trouble if she didn't hurry. You know, just brother and sister things. They sat down for dinner, said the blessing, did their nighttime routine, and went to bed. Just like, you know, your good old American family.
Sure. How old's Annie?
9.
Oh, no. One of your sources was the Annie whatever foundation.
Oh, my God. I don't know if you would pick up on that, but it's completely unrelated.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's not a child murder today.
Oh, my God. I was like, oh, God.
Oh, my God. No, it's Sunday night. I couldn't emotionally handle that right now.
I know. Oh, okay. Great. Now I'm pumped.
Let's talk about murder, huh?
Let's go.
Except later that night, Annie woke up, which I don't think was unusual. I think she often had nightmares and easily woke up. But she went downstairs and she heard her father struggling, then say, help me.
Oh.
She kind of froze in fear. heard someone outside and peeked out the window to see a man walking towards the woods with an axe over his shoulder.
No.
9 years old. And she was so scared, she ran back upstairs, hid under the blanket, and forced herself back to sleep.
Oh my God. Poor baby.
The next morning, Annie creeps downstairs, assuming it was a dream, but she's still scared, and she can't immediately find her parents, so she ran back upstairs to wake Larry up and tell him everything she saw the night before. He assures her that they likely went to the store or something, but gets up with her, goes downstairs, and when he looks out the window into the backyard, he immediately calls 911.
Oh, God.
Because he had just seen his mother face down in the snow, bloody and naked, and posed in an obscene way.
Oh, God.
Cops get there, and they go to the basement where another TV room was, and they find the black vinyl chair that Kay usually sat in with blood pooled beside it. It appeared she had been attacked here first. Then they discover Bob, who was stabbed several times in the neck, chest, and heart. It's determined that Kay must have been stabbed first, and there was a struggle between her and the killer, and Bob came out of his office to see what the commotion was about, and then he got attacked. They found a bloody palm print on the sliding glass door, but neither victim had blood on their hands, so it had to be the killers.
Oh, yeah. Good.
They found bloody footprints leading to the woods behind their house, and as they followed the trail, they also noticed bare footprints, which is assumed to be Kay's because she was found without shoes on. Then these two
separate... Wait, they found what footprints?
Like bare footprints. No shoe. Not a shoe indention. A foot impression.
I'm literally thinking a bear. I was like, how is that Kay? You just said it was a bear.
It should be noted, she had monstrous feet.
It's like, you're victim shaming. Great. We have bears in my neck of the woods. So I was like, huh.
Oh, yeah. Okay. To clear up any confusion,
bare feet.
Not a bear's foot.
Yeah.
Bare feet, not a bear's foot.
Oh, my God.
Then these two separate footprints go out of the woods and almost around the entire neighborhood. So it's evident that while this attacker was killing Bob, Kay made a run for it. And once Bob was dead, the killer ran after her, eventually catching up to her in their backyard where he finished the job by hitting her over the head with an axe.
Ew.
Searching through the woods, they found the murder weapon, a wood-splitting maul.
Oh.
A maul's an axe. Does it?
Okay. I don't know. What the fuck do I know? Oh.
But I had to Google. I was like, a maul? What's that? And I'm like, oh, it's an axe.
They left it in the woods. Okay. Uh-huh.
It had blood and hair on the blade, but it looks like the handle was wiped clean. So they send that shit to the lab, but they can't find one print on it. The cops talk to Annie and Larry, and Annie tells them what she saw the night before. She described the man as being very tall, and he had curly hair. The detective, who was nearly 6 feet, asked if the man was as tall as he was, and she said taller. And Larry freezes in a real holy shit moment and tells police that her description sounds a lot like their brother Michael, who is 6'4" and has curly hair.
So Michael.
Mm-hmm. Myers.
Just kidding. We both said that.
We both thought of Michael Myers. You see, Rach, there is a third child, but that's not the plot twist, people. So chill. But let's rewind. We're going to start at the beginning. Bob and Kay met at University of Maryland while they were both getting their master's in education. She was 27 years old. He was 35, and they got married about a year and a half later. Their friends say everyone felt a connection to them. They were very personable, social. Everyone knew them. Bob, again, was a computer technician for NASA Goddard in Greenbelt, Maryland. And as I mentioned before, Kay was a high school English teacher. But on the side, they ran marriage encounter sessions at St. Mary's Catholic Church. And their dream was to start a family, but the world is cruel. And sadly, Kay could not get pregnant. But this certainly didn't break them. It actually made them closer and gave them a sense of purpose that maybe they were supposed to adopt and help kids with difficult upbringings in hopes to provide guidance and love. They were very religious, very pro-life. In fact, Bob spent a lot of Saturdays protesting outside of Planned Parenthood against abortion, which I know we all have opinions about. Point being, they thought that adopting kids would kind of give them a chance to practice what they preach and give a child a life they deserved. So in 1973, they adopted 6-year-old Larry, which does speak volumes about the intentions and kind of what kind of people they were. They knew the older kids. What?
So Larry's adopted.
Yeah.
Kay, I thought this was all Michael.
Bear children.
Oh, okay. I thought we were all just talking about Michael this whole time. Okay. They adopted Larry.
Yeah.
Okay.
They knew the older kids got, the less likely they would be adopted, according to Annie E. Casey Foundation. In 2021, 54% of adoptions were under five, 25% were from 6 to 10, and it goes down from there.
Oh.
And that's 2021. God. I bet the 70s were, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's sad. Larry was six.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's originally from New Orleans, but his mother abandoned him, I think, because her boyfriend didn't want kids, which is weird that we talked about this today, and monstrous those type of people are.
Wait, that's so crazy.
I know, we did.
We ended talking about this.
I know. I thought of my story, but I obviously just didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
So, if not, like, let me add her. My God. But Larry was so appreciative and so grateful that he was golden child. Very polite. Fun, respectful, and because this sweet baby angel worked out so well, a couple of years later, they decided to adopt another little boy, 8-year-old Michael.
Oh.
He was 6 months younger than Larry, so it was perfect because they would be like best friends, same grade, whatever.
Yeah.
But Michael had a very rough go. His mother abandoned him when he was an infant, so he was relinquished to the state, where he was then turned over to foster care and was in 6 different homes before Bob and Kay adopted him.
Sad.
6 homes in 8 years is horrible.
Yeah.
For a child's poor developing brain.
Mm-hmm.
The behavioral issues that would come with this, I mean, are expected, but the Schwartzes were determined to turn it around. Friends of the Schwartzes said that he was it's interesting what they said. They said he had a very antisocial approach to life. And the problems Kay and Bob were faced with started immediately. He wouldn't obey. He was always acting out, but at the same time wanted to be a part of their family. He was just never really taught the basics, how to behave or social cues. And it was definitely going to take some time, some effort, and a shit ton of patience. But again, they were willing to put in the work. Sidebar story, because it just tugs at my heartstrings. And mm-hmm. I read it and just can't not throw in this. Only a few weeks after Michael's adoption, they were once at the dinner table and he wasn't minding his manners. So Bob yelled at him and Michael ran outside crying, and Larry ran after him, hugged him and said, "Don't worry, it gets better."
Oh my God.
It's just a sweet brotherly moment because he's the only other person who knows what he's going through.
Oh my God. I hate that story.
I know. No, that's a feel good moment. And there's a few sprinkled in here.
I don't feel good.
Well, that was a nice palate cleanser for me to this gruesome ass murder.
Well, that just makes me so sad for Michael. He's like, I don't know what to do.
We'll get better, Michael. He told you. As the boys grew older, Michael continued to struggle, but Bob and Kay were still very hopeful for both their kids. They really valued the importance of education and really pushed them to do well in school. It was top priority. And actually, Michael was pretty good at school, but didn't like it at all. Did not try. Mm-hmm. And this pissed Kay and Bob off to no end. They couldn't understand how he just didn't care. To them, getting good grades meant going places in life.
That's just not true.
I know, not true at all. I was about to say, just retelling a story, guys. I don't think grades are everything.
No.
I was not a straight B student. And look at me now. People want to hear what I have to say.
Yeah, it's not the grades you make. It's the hands you shake. Whatever right. The fuck they say. But it's not wrong.
Not the size of the boat, it's the motion of the ocean. Oh no.
That's nope.
That's a different one.
That's talking about something else.
And what pissed them off even more was that Larry tried very hard in school and just could not get good grades.
Aww.
He even wanted to be a priest, so they sent him to seminary school in Pennsylvania, but he couldn't keep his grades up, so they sent him back home.
Just struggle bus.
He really struggled. And it seems like Kay and Bob almost resented Michael for that. But both boys did kind of find their niche. Michael got really into music and Larry was this huge soccer star at school. So their parents really supported those hobbies and wanted them to excel in them. Then in 1979, when Michael and Larry were about 13, they adopted 4-year-old Annie. She was from South Korea and didn't speak much English, but she quickly became everyone's favorite. Like Larry and Michael's too.
Aw.
In fact, when Annie first came to the Schwartz's home, she wouldn't sleep in a bed because she was used to sleeping on a mat on the floor. So until she adjusted, Larry would sleep on the floor with her so she wouldn't be lonely.
Larry's a sweet little baby angel.
I have to sprinkle the little sibling moments because it's filled with them. I think that might be the last one, though.
That's cute. I know. That one's better. That one's better.
The one. Oh, a 4-year-old sleeping on a mat on the floor because that's all she knows is better?
Yeah, with her brother sleeping next to her so he won't be lonely. Yeah, is better than the one where the kid runs screaming from the dinner table crying
because he doesn't know
how to behave. Yeah, I prefer the mat one. At me. At Rach, me.
Hey, Rach, come on. Not one's worse than the other. Don't do that. Not cool.
It's not cool. You're right.
So Annie was really the golden child. And for some reason, this made Bob and Kay more strict with the boys. Obviously more so Michael, because Larry was obedient, kind of flew under the radar. Michael definitely got the brunt of it. And tension between him and his parents, particularly with Bob, was escalating. And he was becoming more defiant. One time, as a retaliation to being grounded, he let the air out of Bob and Kay's tires. So Bob made him hand pump them all back up.
Oh,
just shit like that constantly. Wow. Back and forth.
Oh, fuck. They're the victims. Damn it. I was going to say, I'm getting a little annoyed of the parents.
I think a lot of people kind of are.
We like our daughter so much that now we're going to be more strict on y'all. Like, what? What's that have to do with anything?
Right. And especially at a time when those two boys just need unconditional love at this point. Like,
I know, but devil's advocate, easier said than done.
No, I know.
If your kid's being all shit.
Letting air out of your tires would be real fucking annoying.
I mean, wow.
I mean, day ruiner. I can't. By 1980, it was at a breaking point. One night, Michael asked to go out with his friends, and they said no, so he snuck out, and around midnight, he returned, but the door was locked. So he was forced to knock and wake everyone up, and Kay stood at the window and told him they were not letting him in and they had had enough. So he walked to a neighbor's house, spent the night, and got himself to school the next day. And while he was there, Kay and Bob called social services and said they can't handle him anymore.
What?
I know. To them.
There must be a lot of worse examples.
I know. And
I'm like, that's not chill.
I know. And those were like the main examples that people gave that I'm like, okay, wow. That's not criminal. He's not robbing liquor stores at 15 years old. Like,
he snuck out?
Right.
Wow. Now I'm annoyed of them.
Yeah. It's very, I'm like, can I get specific examples?
And they need to be real bad, actually. Sneaking out need not apply.
Right. Right. I know. It does seem weird, especially this next part, because I'm like, what's happening? But
it seems weird that you wouldn't let your 15-year-old in the house at midnight.
Right. So to Bob and Kay, they had two very promising kids. And after 5 years of struggling with Michael, Kay and Bob were so concerned with his volatile and rebellious behavior, they asked the state to place him with another family.
No.
So he had been there for 5 years where I'm like, aren't you like already so emotionally attached? You're like,
He wasn't 15. How old was he when he snuck out?
So they adopted him when he was 8. This is 5 years later.
13.
They adopted Michael in 1975. Yes, this is 5 years later. He's 13. Jesus, that's young to be.
It's a young stink out. It's, again, even younger to be like, no, you're not welcome in this house. Go to the neighbor's house in the middle of the night. If I were the neighbor, I'd be like, fuck you.
No. Go.
Open your goddamn door. This isn't my kid. This isn't my kid. No. You go back to your parents.
Yeah, this is not a hotel. I am not here for that. Get out of here.
I'm not the Punisher. Go back. Right. Put your mother on the phone.
God, that is so true. How obnoxious.
Hey, can you imagine?
I have kids too that I want sleep too. Midnight? Go to hell. So once again, he's rejected. He's feeling rejected. He went to a reform school, but got in a fight with someone. So he was kicked out and sent to a mental hospital to be evaluated. Called Crownsville Hospital Center. This is what I meant by the next part is, I'm like, can I get more details when he kicks some kid's ass on a bus?
Right.
A mental hospital.
That's very common in the, well, I hate even thinking of the 80s like
80s,
that. But
I know.
Like in the 60s and stuff, that was like just the go-to. If your kid was rebellious, you went to a mental hospital.
And he did. It was Crownsville Hospital Center. And this place wasn't great. It had a long history of being overcrowded and understaffed. Actually, in the 50s, a reporter with the Baltimore Sun wrote an article on Maryland's mental health system and referred to Crownsville as Maryland's shame, claiming that 1,800 men, women, and children were forced to live in buildings meant for no more than 1,100. Obviously, this was 30 years before Michael was there, and I don't think the conditions were as bad as they once were, but according to one of Kay's friends, it still had a reputation of being very lax. She said it was very much a hospital, not a prison. And I think as long as they signed out, they're free to leave.
Okay.
Michael was actually living here in 1984. He spent almost four years there. And he was there on the night of the murders. But given its reputation, it wouldn't be hard for him to leave. So police make the trip to Crownsville and security gave their backlog of patient signouts. And there's no sign out for Michael, but that by no means rules him out.
Yeah. And so he would be 17 at this point.
Yeah.
He was 17 at the time of the murders. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So they question him and they notice a bunch of what appears to be bruising to his neck. And they ask him about it. And he says that they're hickeys. He says he'd be fucking.
Hell yeah. Get you some.
So 80s. I'm like, oh, that checks out. 1984? Probably. Yeah. It checks out.
Hickeys. Yeah.
Hickeys. Cops are very suspicious, but there's not enough to arrest them, so they leave, and Michael quickly lawyers up, and his attorney tells him not to say one word to anyone about anything. So now with this hurdle, the cops turn to that bloody palm print found on the sliding glass door at the scene, but this is 1984, so this was not going to be quick. They had to lift the print and send it to the FBI in D.C. to have it tested, and it was going to be a whole process. While that's being done, the town is abuzz. A crazed killer chasing one of their own through the once quiet neighborhood had everyone on edge. So there was a ton of pressure on the police, and even more so when the coroner's report came back with the brutality of their autopsies.
Oh, no. Does Annie, like, is she like, yeah, it could have been Michael. Like, does she know him well enough? I mean, I guess if she's nine at this point, she was four when he left. Like, so yeah, sure, could have been.
It's hard for Annie because literally she's everyone's favorite. Michael isn't a dick to her. Like she loved Michael. Michael loved her. And like probably, he was bad to my parents, but Desi.
I know, but
I'm
just wondering, the man she saw walking in the woods with an axe, are they like, could that have been your brother Michael? Is she like, yeah, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Looked a lot like him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. But it was dark and
he's
walking away. So like it's.
Yeah. But he's that tall. That's interesting. Okay.
Right. But and she hasn't seen him in 4 years. So.
Yeah, that's true. Noted.
So the autopsy. Bob was stabbed 17 times total, and his right and left carotid arteries were severed. Anatomy lesson, carotid arteries are a major blood vessel that provides your brain's blood supply. You have two, one on either side of your neck. They are both severed.
Oof.
Kay's autopsy showed that she was stabbed 7 times in her neck area, including her esophagus, so she couldn't scream while running through the neighborhood.
It's like Casey Becker and Scream.
It really is. And this is like really tormented neighbors. They're like, oh God, if I just looked out the window, would I have seen her? Like it tore the entire neighborhood up.
Oh God.
But these stabs were pretty light other than the esophagus. None were lethal. And this was not done with an axe. Bob and Kay were initially stabbed with a butcher knife that no one has ever found. Her autopsy showed that her skull was split with the axe, which is obviously what killed her.
Oh, God.
Sorry, that's it. I'm sorry. So it's concluded that the killer was very frustrated when he realized that she wasn't dead the first time. So he grabbed the axe when chasing her to really make sure the job was done. And all it took was that one fatal hit.
You have an axe and you want to make sure the job is done. So you hit them with it. It's an axe.
Oh, I'm sparing you the details.
Oh, he like hit her. He...
Blade down.
Blade. Oh my God.
Well, I thought that was clear when I said blood and hair was on the blade and the.
No, it wasn't. Not with these cobwebs. Oh, I hate that. Okay, never mind. I don't want to hear it again. I thought you meant he like bludgeoned her with it. I was like,
I'm just trying to spare you. You're welcome.
Thanks for that. Oh God. I'm going to vomit.
Neighbors tell cops that years before when Michael was living there, he got in trouble for something. Again, one source said he was kicking some kid's ass on the school bus, but who knows. And his punishment was, of course, manual labor. That's Bob's go-to. Bob gave him that very axe and made him cut a stump out in the front yard. And oddly enough, I don't know why, but a neighbor filmed this. There's actual footage of Michael going to town on this huge stump. It's very weird.
Well, was he like doing a great job? Maybe they're like, holy shit, well, look at this kid.
No, because no progress was made in a month. That stump was still there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Every night for 3 hours, he would use the axe to chop down this dead stump. And after a month of doing that, the stump was still there. Like, very little progress was being made.
So then maybe the opposite. The neighbor was like, holy shit, this kid's at it again.
Making fun of him.
Yeah. Pussy. Yeah. Like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Should I go help him or just film him?
Yeah, exactly. Let's film this kid. Chuckles in the background. Yeah, it's like this Seinfeld episode.
He's doing it wrong. It's upside down. Does he know that axe is a plastic toy that his little sister has?
What if it is? I bet it's a sign. I don't remember if it's a silent video. But I'm like, it's because they're like, you can have it, but you have to swear to God you have to cut the commentary.
Yeah, yeah. We come off like dicks in this, so mute this.
You can use it as evidence, but... So yeah, very little progress was being made after a month, and Michael was visibly pissed off about it. He even told Kay at one point, you know, I could stab Bob in the back and nothing would happen to me because I'm a juvenile.
Oh.
Foreshadowing? Dunno. Or you dunno. So, understandably, cops and everyone in town was confident he just made good on his promise. Cops go back to Crownsville, where Michael said he was the night of the murders, and they lock themselves in Michael's room to see if and how easy it is to sneak out undetected. And, as it turns out, not at all. It's actually damn near impossible.
Oh, okay. It's not at all easy. Okay.
Yeah, not at all easy. So at a complete loss, they turn to the community for help and set up a tip line. Several come in, and one of them mentioned the pro-life protest Bob attended in Annapolis, claiming for 4 years he never missed a Saturday. And he was so aggressive when women walked in that several police reports were filed against him.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Just like getting in their faces. Getting in their faces.
Fuck off.
Like, no better way to change someone's mind than screaming in their face. Screaming. Also, wow. That's not all Planned Parenthood does, you know.
I know. Like, that's what I'm
it's
like.
It's affordable health care. Some poor woman's like.
It's like, I'm just getting my birth control. Chill.
Well, he would be against that, too. No,
I know. Like, whatever.
Bob definitely thinks embryos are babies.
Yeah, he'd love Alabama 40 years later. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't he?
Sure would.
Call your congressman, Bama.
So obviously, I don't agree. We're not getting political here, but I do not agree with Bob.
Well, I don't want anyone yelling in anyone's face in any. I mean, no, in get any capacity. Out of here.
But I'm sure the emotions of Kay unable to bear a child played a lot into his resentment towards abortion.
That is sad. Mm-hmm. All right,
but still, don't get in anyone's face. Bad enough to have a police report filed against you. Several?
That's not good.
Don't like that. So they looked into the specific women who filed the police reports, thinking maybe he made an enemy or two, but nothing came from that. They even considered that maybe Kay pissed off a student, but apparently she was the teacher you wanted to get, and everyone liked her, so that goes nowhere either. Mm-hmm. Then the analysis from that bloody handprint finally came back from the FBI, and it confirmed who it belonged to, and police are shocked.
I have a feeling. I think I know.
Do you? Because, Rach, they had the wrong brother all along. The blood was Larry Schwartz's.
Holy shit.
The people-pleasing, priest-aspiring soccer star killed his parents.
He slept on the floor next to Annie so she wouldn't be lonely.
I know. He consoled Michael when he got in trouble.
He said it gets better.
He did say it gets better, but it got worse, I think.
What's his problem?
You can imagine this media frenzy. The headlines.
And Michael's like, fuck all y'all. How many times do I have to tell y'all to fuck off?
No shit.
Michael vindicated it. And he's like, damn, that's crazy though.
But all the headlines are like, model son slays parents. But some before Larry gets caught, is like, orphaned again by the slaying of parents. A lot of slaying.
Oh.
A lot of headlines. You slay. I'm like, oh God, how gruesome.
That is gruesome. That's because of axe. That's what you do with an axe. Slay. Gross.
Ew. Mm. That's it.
Wow. The hell is this problem?
Well, we'll get there. And actually, at first, they're thinking, no, this is a mistake somehow. But they re-listen to the 911 call. And he says, I think my parents are dead. But when the first cop gets to the scene, Larry told him he nor Annie had gone downstairs yet, which is where Bob was. So how did he know both parents were dead?
Oh.
Don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So he's charged with murder, and 3 days after his parents' funeral, Larry breaks down to his attorneys and confesses to the entire thing. And here's what he has to say. Ever since Michael was kicked out of the house, Larry was convinced they would kick him out too, and he did not want to go back to foster care. Reasonably so, because he was about to age out of the system, then what?
Oh my God.
Then, the night before the murder, he was out with a, quote, promiscuous girl that Bob and Kay didn't approve of. So they berated him about it when he got home, and this caused a huge fight. The next night, the night of the murder, Bob got mad at him for messing with his computer. I think kind of roughed him up a bit. So Larry went upstairs and drank some rum, as you do at 17, let's be honest. Then he went back downstairs and was watching TV with Kay, and she asked about his Spanish test that day. Remember, he didn't make good grades. And he said he didn't think he did well on it at all, but he did think he did well on his other tests. And according to Larry, she responded with a sarcastic, what?
I'm just picturing
a kid failing out of school. That is funny. Let's all take a laugh break.
She asked about his Spanish test, and he said,
no point.
It was no point.
I knew you were going to say that. But he did tell her he thinks he did well on all his other tests. And according to Larry, she responded with a sarcastic remark that belittled him. I think
what?
Something. I know.
Like,
I think
something, yeah, right.
Like, yeah. It was,
don't hold, like, your breath.
Exactly. I actually think it was something like, no, you probably failed those two or something. And he, and saying like, but I think I did well on my other tests. Like, I want you to be proud of me. So, just so sad.
And especially that he tries.
And you're a teacher. Excuse me. Anyway,
oh God,
not trying to victim blame. No one deserves to die like that, but my God,
yeah, no way. No one deserves to die like that, but I keep forgetting they're the victims.
I know.
I keep getting mad at them. Okay. Yikes. That is sad.
Yeah, that's sad. But he said he just snapped.
Shit.
He really? Grabbed a kitchen knife and just started stabbing her. He said it was like a balloon that was slowly being inflated, and it just popped in that moment. He described himself as being on the ceiling and watching this all go down, just completely outside of his mind. And at one point, he even said he remembers growling like a dog or a wolf.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like, it got.
Oh, God.
I also think it's interesting that he said he describes himself on the ceiling watching this all go down, mainly because of my survival episode.
I know.
Where I'm like,
that's so interesting.
That's so interesting that when you die, you apparently rise above the whatever scenario is going on and look at it. And the killer does too.
Where was Annie during this?
Asleep.
Oh, this was
at night. At this point, she's probably creeping down the stairs, hearing Bob say, help me. Remember?
Yeah. But, okay. Keep going. Because he's not 6'4"? Oh, I'm so confused. Okay.
No, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Getting there. So Larry confirms, as cops guessed, Bob heard the attack and ran out of his office, so he turned his attention to him, stabbing him 17 times. And after he stopped moving, he went back to Kay, but she was gone.
Oh, God.
He saw her outside, and he chased her around the neighborhood and through the woods and finally caught her, pulled her into the backyard where he hit her with an axe. I don't know what else to say, but you get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he hit her with the axe, and as his final act of humiliation, he stripped off her clothes, positioned her in that obscene way, and sexually assaulted her.
He did not.
Mm.
Sick.
Ew. No bueno.
Talk about no bueno.
Ugh. Not cool at all.
Gross.
He had no idea that Annie was watching these final moments from the window, which actually worked in his favor, because when she told cops she saw a very tall man with curly hair, he was thinking, fuck yeah. Because while Larry does have curly hair, he is not at all tall. Definitely under 6 feet. To his luck, she's 9. And everyone is tall to her.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
So he used this to his advantage and decided that this was the perfect opportunity to peg it on his very tall, curly-haired, rebellious brother, Michael.
Oh, my God.
For his confession, he was given a deal. He was sentenced to 20 years with 8 suspended. So 12 years total. But he only served 9.
What?
I know. He was released in 1993 at the age of 27. And over the next 10 years, he relocated to Florida, earned a college degree, started his own family, and apparently became a pillar in the community. But what? In 2004, at the age of 38, he died unexpectedly of a heart attack.
Wait, at the age of what? 38?
Yes.
Whoa.
He was stressed, man. He had a rough go, and then he murdered his parents, and yeah.
Yikes.
But his obituary is like explains the story, and then it's like he was preceded in death by his parents whom he killed. Yeah. And like,
wow.
But it says he was essentially a model citizen in their community of Florida. And I'm like, in Florida you are.
Well, yeah. They're like, so what? Just kidding, Florida.
Just kidding, Florida.
Y'all get it.
You know. An update on Annie and Michael.
That's what I want.
Annie was adopted by friends of Kay and Bob. She eventually got married, then divorced, but she does have two kids. And someone on Reddit actually asked for an update on her. And a commenter insinuated she never got the help she needed, referring to Annie. And her ex-husband stepped in to defend and annihilate that commenter. So she has a stand-up ex-husband, which is great.
Oh.
He's like, start your very confident comment about my ex-wife with, I'm not sure, but...
Oh.
And because it goes on to be like, her kids won't see her. She never got the help she needed. And he's like, whoa, for someone not being sure, you sure are being fucking confident. Sure.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And yeah. So he's like, screw you. You have no idea what she went through and all that. So I'm like,
oh, God.
You have a great ex-husband.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, she did get the help she needed. Like, it was a complete loss. Michael was at a complete loss. His brother and best friend was in prison. His sister was no longer his sister. His parents, who wrote him out of the will as soon as he left the house, FYI, are dead. So he had nowhere to turn to except robbery and drugs.
Oh, no.
I know. And sadly, 7 years after the murder, he robbed a man named Robert Austin Bell, who Michael and his friend / accomplice ended up stabbing to death. So he too went to prison, life without parole, much harsher than Larry's. And here's what's terrible. It was all over a jar of quarters Larry wanted to steal to buy liquor.
Whoa.
He stabbed him 48 times for a jar of quarters.
Holy shit.
That's a dark headspace.
Ooh, that is dark.
That's a dark place
to be. Wow, he murdered someone and so did Larry. Wow.
Yeah. He ended up calling the police on himself 20 minutes after the murder, claiming his friend did it. But, ironic enough, there was a bloody palm print on the victim's door that matched Michael's.
Oh,
exact weird. Same way Larry got caught.
Wow.
It's insane, huh?
Yes.
And that's the all-around tragic story of the Schwartz family.
Oh, my God. It really is.
I know. And, you know, sometimes these victims, you know, they'll light up the room and their friends love them. But I know sometimes you got mad at them. And actually, the Medium article I sourced, I kind of like how she said it. She said, life inside the Schwartz home was quite different than it appeared to outsiders. The adoptive parents had good intentions, but were ill-equipped to handle traumatized kids with known problems. Instead of showering their three damaged children with unconditional love, acceptance, and support, they blasted them with constant criticism and multiple forms of abuse.
Ooh.
No one deserves to die like that. That is...
Fuck no.
Ooh. Disgusting. And it's also all around sad.
All around sad. Thanks for that.
You're welcome. Patrons. Cecily, Stetson, Margie, Kelsey, Elizabeth, Rye or Ree. I'm sorry. I don't know how to pronounce it. Meredith, Christine, Caitlin, Madison, Eric, Hudson, Angela, Janelle, Katie, Julia, Mary, and Clorinda. Oh. Thank you.
Holy shit.
I know. I love it.
Y'all, I love that. You'll keep get your gifts, I promise.
You'll get your
gifts.
Couple
months. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I've just been so falling behind.
No, she won't. She'll overnight them tonight.
I'll stay up and do it. Y'all are the best. Thank y'all.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really, really helps. We have a couple of custom shout outs. From Paige, I want to shout out my bestie's business. It's so nice when people do that. Good for y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Small business owners need everyone's support. So this is nice. Southern Belle Dream Vacations. She's a travel agent who offers her complete free service helping you plan your dream vacation at Disney World. I know from the amazing trip she's planned for me that she knows all the best insider tips and tricks, Follow her for fun Disney content at SB_DreamVacations on Instagram and TikTok.
Oh, wow.
And if you want her to plan and book your Disney trip, it's literally free for you. She will help you with dining reservations, ride recommendations, answer all your questions, and be the most fun travel agent you've ever worked with. The only thing she loves more than true crime is travel planning. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's nice. That's the only way I would plan a trip to Disney.
Yeah.
Is to have someone do all that for me.
Oh, my God, for sure. All right, this is from Diana. I want to shout out my sister's small business called Heavyweight Ceramics. She started a couple of years ago after moving to Budapest with her partner, getting stuck there for an extra year during COVID and signing up for pottery classes just for the sake of making some friends out there.
Oh, my God.
This is cool. As it turns out, she's a natural. The bitch is a Jane of all trades. That's from your sister, not me. So in addition to being really funny and smart as a whip accountant and a part of a real estate team, God, and a house flipper, Jesus.
Stop.
Now she's killing it in Nashville art fairs and on Instagram selling tons of really cool pottery. She has really beautiful glazing work and once even made me an ashtray with a tarot card printed on the inside. So cool, I can barely bring myself to ash in it. Her pieces make truly unique gifts and they're way too affordable. I'm always telling her she needs to start charging more for everything. So get them while you can.
Get them while you can because she may listen to her one day.
All right. Check out her work. Her Instagram is at Heavyweight Ceramics. And I have looked them up. They're really cool. She has like a plate that looks like a fried egg. So it's cute, you know?
Yeah. Love that.
Last custom shout out is from Tiffany. For my custom shout out, I'd like to shout out my bestie, Gabby. We geek over true crime together all the time, and I just introduced People Are the Worst to her. She's literally my soulmate and best friend form, and the best god mom to my baby, aka my dog, Nala Roo. Heart you, buddy. But I've read it in my head. The best goddamn bitch. The best god mom.
Super passionate.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for introducing Gabby to People Are the Worst.
Yeah, Tiffany, thank you. So, Gabby, pay it forward and introduce someone else to People.
Now you have to keep going.
Now you need to do it. It's all a big game of telephone over here.
Yeah. Nice. Thanks, y'all. Thanks for joining the top tier Patreon. That's how you get those custom shouts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, y'all have a great week. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Y'all are the best. People are the worst.
Bye.